We are breaking the silence, starting the conversation.
Welcome back, everybody, to the podcast. I am joined here today with Camille. Camille is an author, a mother, and a survivor. She's here to talk through her story as well as her journey of getting everything out of her mind down onto paper and what it was like to tell the truth, not only for herself, but for the world. So welcome to the podcast, Camille.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and share my story with everyone.
Yeah, we're very honored to have you. I mean, just to kind of get us started, do you mind telling us a little bit about your story and what kind of brought you to the Breaking Silence podcast?
Sure. So when I was really little, I was like about 5 or 6 when my first, you know, kind of, I wouldn't call experience, but the first time that I ever was faced with kind of like a hard situation, it was like a friend of my dad's who, I don't remember his name or anything, but I just remember, I don't even know if I had seen him before there, but he was just visiting and he had a bike and he asked, you know, can I take you and your brother for a ride? And so he took my brother, I believe he took my brother first. And I was just like excited to kind of like, you know, get a ride too. And then when I jumped on, we had only maybe went as far as maybe the very next house. And he reached down between my legs and he touched me. And I just kind of immediately froze. Like I hadn't been talked to about that, but my body was saying like, this is not okay. Like I immediately froze, didn't even know like what to do or say. And then he asked me yes or no. That was it. Said yes or no. Mm-hmm. But I knew automatically that this was not okay. And I said, no, he turned the bike around, went back to my house. I jumped off. I ran inside. I was frightened. I'm crying. And, you know, my parents were kind of like, you know, what's going on? And I just said, you know, he touched me, and my dad immediately ran out of the house. He was gone, of course. But my dad knew where to find him. Like he knew where he was. He put us all in the car, drove over to where he was at. My dad got out, confronted him. I was very quick. He beat him up and we were gone. And I mean, the whole conversation was never talked about when we got home. Like it wasn't like, I'm so sorry this happened, or this is what happened, or like nothing. It was just like, it happened. We moved on and then, you know, went about our business. And I thought, and at the time I just knew something happened, but that was it. And then as I got older, you know, my mom passed away when I was 9 of breast cancer. So we bounced around a little bit, me and my siblings. My dad wasn't in the best position to kind of take care of 3 kids on his own. So we lived with a sister of his who thought it would be like, you know, to keep us together. And the first maybe 6 months were great. It was like, oh, we're together. We're in a home. We're going to like be okay, taken care of. And then it was like a light switch flipped and I was treated very like unfairly. I was emotionally abused, verbally abused. And then a couple years into that, I didn't know at the time what grooming was until I was much older that I learned what that actually was. And then thought back like, oh my gosh, this is what's happened to me over the years. I had a cousin who was her son, and I spent a lot of time with him and his wife. And, you know, my aunt was just, for whatever reason, I got treated like I was just not family. It was just like a visiting relative who just, they couldn't wait to get rid of. And so they seen that treatment. So they would say, you know, just come to my house and hang out. And I looked up to my cousin like a brother, somebody who was like, I'm going to like protect you and I'm going to do this. But little did I know that that closeness and hanging out turned into something more in his mind. So one afternoon in the summer, it was a summer going into 7th grade. I was at their house and his wife left to go drop off her son at her mom's. And she asked me if I wanted to go. And I told her, no, I'll just hang out here. And then I heard him call my name and he was kind of like in the back of his apartment. And so I went looking for him because I didn't know where he was. And then he was, it was the first time that I learned really what drugs were. Mm-hmm. So he taught me how to smoke crank like out of a pipe. I had no idea what it does to you, anything. I was just like, oh, okay. Like, I, sure, this is my older brother, right? Kind of like, he, this is like, okay to do.
How old are you at this moment?
I am 12.
12. Yeah. So it's a little one still.
Yeah. I was still very little because of the way it was with my aunt and the way she treated me. I started early on, like, feeling depressed, being anxious. She wasn't around a lot. So I would started drinking early, kind of to just kind of cope. And then when this happened with her son, where I was at their house, and then when he called me after we smoked, I was kind of just like, you know, kind of in a daze, like, okay, what do you do? Like, do you sit around? Like, do you talk? Like, I have no idea. And then I heard him call me again. And so I was, went to look for him, and he was in his bedroom. And when I walked into the room, he was standing behind the door, and he closed the door and had me on the bed. And I immediately froze. Like, I didn't, I felt like I couldn't move. I didn't know what to say. Can I say no? Like, I had no idea, like, what was going on in that moment. Yeah. And then I just remember, like, feeling like there was a million pounds on me, and I just immediately froze and thought, okay, what is exactly, like, going on? Is this, like, a joke? Like, I had no idea. And he was trying to have sex with me. So the only thing that saved me was his younger son was at home, and I didn't realize that he was left behind, and he opened the door, and I was able to, like, get away because he jumped off of me not wanting somebody to see. He didn't know who was opening the door. So mm-hmm. I was in the front yard, like, trying to process, like, what just happened. And then a few minutes later, he walked to the front yard, sat next to me, and just said that he was, like, lonely, that his wife didn't, like, understand him. And he was like, it's okay for us to do this. Like, we can fool around. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm your cousin, and this is so not okay. Like, I didn't know very much about, like, sex or anything, but I did know that was not, like, okay at all.
Right.
No. So I couldn't wait for his wife to come back, because I, you know, he was telling me, like, basically, like, stay quiet about this, like, don't say anything. And at that moment, my main focus was that I'm frightened. I don't want to be left alone with him. And everything that I thought I knew was, like, broken with, like, trust and thinking, like, you know, we're, like, family. So when his wife came back, I told her, I said, I need to tell you something, but I don't want him to hear me. And then I said, can you just act like you're taking me home to, like, get clothes or something, but I need to talk to you. So we left, and she told him, you know, I'm going to take her to get clothes. And then I told her in the car, like, this is what happened when you left. And she told me she was sorry, and she took me to my cousin's house, who was, that was his sister. Mm. And she told her what happened. And I'm thinking, like, maybe they're going to, like, confront him or call the cops. I mean, I don't know. I just knew that, I just figured they were going to do something about what had happened. And then they says, okay, we're not going to tell my mom about this. We're just going to keep it to ourselves. And I'm thinking, okay, like, it was not, it was, I was just shown, like, it wasn't okay. Like, it was okay that it happened. We're just going to let it go. Like, he didn't hurt you. We're going to let it go. So I stayed at my cousin's house that night, and then I went back home the next day. But this was weighing really heavy on me, that I just was trying to think, like, okay, like, this really, really happened.
Right. When you kind of think about your choice to tell in that moment, can you kind of remember how you're able to do so quickly? You know, that there was sort of this, like, okay, I got to tell what just happened moment for you.
So I was able to tell her because I really trusted her. Mm. And I knew that she would believe me. So I wasn't always around adults that I felt like I could, like, go to and talk to and say things. So with her, she made me feel safe. I just knew that because I was planning to stay at their house for the weekend, that if I didn't say something, then it would have, something more, probably more than likely would have happened, or I would have been left alone. And I just knew that, like, I didn't want that to go like any further.
Right.
So I felt okay to tell her, but even after like now three adults knew, and it was, we're going to keep it to ourselves. We're not going to say anything. And I thought this, I just knew like, okay, like, is it going to not be said like right now? Is it going to later? And nothing was ever said to anything. So it was weighing really heavy on me where I was always wanting to like wear a sweater or kind of feel like I was wanting to cover up because I just felt really uncomfortable. I couldn't sleep. I had anxiety, which at the time I didn't realize was anxiety. And then I was trying to like mask all those feelings of what I was feeling. So I was drinking a little bit more. And if anybody paid attention, a 12-year-old drinking is, you know, there's a problem.
Yeah.
But nobody ever bothered to ask if I was okay or pay attention. So I just kind of knew how to do it discreetly and not like get caught with it until I confided in a friend of mine. When we started seventh grade, I just told her like, this is why I'm doing this. This is what happened. She told our school counselor, and our school counselor had to report this, and which I thought this was going to be like, okay, it's out. I can like breathe, like something's going to happen about it. And they called my aunt, who ironically worked for Child Protective Services. So they called her in the office. They talked to her. A police officer was there. I sat out in the hallway and I could hear my aunt saying, she makes up stories. She likes to say things for attention, but they believed me. And they told her he is not allowed to be around her. He is not allowed to go to your house if she's home. You have to keep him away from her. And she signed a paper and said, okay, we left the school and walked to the car. And she says, you think I'm going to keep my son away from my house? I am not going to do that. And she said, who's going to believe you that this happened? I believe that you're lying. And so we went home and she says, if my son gets in trouble, you'll see like what will happen. So anytime he would come over, she would just send me to my room. I was terrified in my room because I knew that she didn't believe me. I wasn't going to be protected. There was times he would spend the night and I would be so terrified and not sleep because I had no idea if he was going to like go to my room or anything like that. So the message that was made clear to me was that I was kind of on my own. I had to deal with my own stuff going on. And I thought, wow, like I'm really not even safe at home. But I didn't feel safe there. I always felt bullied. So I felt like I was just kind of like to myself and no one talked to me. And if it was talking to me, it was negative talk. There was never like, how was your day or like anything. It was just kind of like I was to myself. So after a few, probably like a year, I just knew that I couldn't stay in a house where I was always emotionally abused. And obviously, you know, with this going on, it was just too much. So I decided to, I ran away from home and I moved in with my grandma. And that was, I remember the day that I left. I went to like the welfare office and I said, I want to report this. I need to leave. And they called my aunt and said, we have her in our office. She will not be returning to your house. And I could hear on the other end that all she said was, okay. And she hung up the phone. And like, that was it. It was that simple to just get rid of me. And I had to go to a foster home for a couple days until they like cleared my grandma's house. I'd never been to a foster home, so I didn't know what to expect. And my stuff was dropped off in a black trash bag with just my belongings that she left for me. And it was like, I didn't exist anymore. So when I went to live with my grandma's house, I thought, okay, I'm living here. It's all, like, I'm going to forget about all this. I'm not going to like remember it. It's going to go away. But obviously that's not the case. It stayed. I mean, I had PTSD. I couldn't sleep at night. I was anxious all the time. I just, even though I was at that situation, it was still there. Like it wasn't dealt with. I felt like everybody got away with everything that happened, nothing was ever followed up. I felt like I was failed by adults in my life. I was failed by the system. I felt like even though people knew about this, it just didn't matter. And I think it took me years to realize that because she works for Child Protective Services at the time, that in my gut tells me that like she made it go away.
Totally. Like
she made this go away. However she did it, I have no idea. But it's just things like that just don't go away like that.
What was it like to have that shift? You had these adults that believed you. You had your counselor at school believe you. You had these people that were on your side, in other words. But then you had this person, your aunt, take it away, not just once, but time and time again. It's hard to process the assault that took place. I would imagine it's also extremely difficult to process that information. Can you just talk a little bit more about what that felt like to go through that?
It felt, for the first time since I was six, I felt really like helpless. I felt like I literally had nowhere to turn. I had to just keep it to myself, and it ate away at me all the time. I felt ashamed. I felt like, oh my gosh, is this my fault? Because I was, you know, I didn't have adults in my life. And then finally, when I had adults who were like paying attention to me or talking to me or wanting to spend time with me, it was for something else. Mm-hmm. And never in years did I ever have that cross my mind. Like I never would have thought that that would have ever like occurred to me. I just thought, you know, you have family and they're there and they're family, and family can't do that. Like they wouldn't do that. And then it's like, okay, then a reality came into play of like, I didn't trust anybody after that. I didn't want to be left alone anywhere, but it was like, I didn't have a choice into, if I would have known what I know today of like, I could have went to any other adult who would have listened. I could have went back to school and said something. I could have told somebody at church. I could have called the police myself. Like I had options, but when you live in a house where you're bullied and you're like verbally abused and emotionally abused, you don't feel like you'll be believed and you're afraid. Like there's that fear of you hate it at your house, but you're still afraid. Like there's that, you know, hung over you. And I feel like she used her position where she worked as like this power to like hold over a 12-year-old kid who doesn't know about a lot of these things. And even if it wasn't even talked about, like to say, okay, say this did happen, how did it happen? Or, you know, what happened? It was nothing like that. It was just that, no, you're lying. And that was it. It was cut off. Nothing was talked about. So I felt like, okay, maybe on some level, I shouldn't have people be nice to me because maybe. And so I had that thinking in my head is like, okay, is somebody being nice to me because they want something? So I didn't trust people to trust people. I didn't know who was really being like genuine. And then after that, when there was people who were just being nice because they were family, you know, she would like make comments like, oh, don't be too close to her. Don't be around her because she likes to make up stories. And then she would have to she explained her version of the story and always made me out to be like, I was just felt like a victim all the time. Like I never felt like I was just a normal kid or I had like a normal childhood. Like I felt like I was robbed of that from that situation from when I was six. When I moved in with my grandma, you know, I thought, okay, I'm good now. Everything's going to be perfect. I'm out of that. But then when I was in high school, I was sexually assaulted twice. One was I was a teen who was bullied in school. So I would ditch school and I had made like friends with just older people. And we went to a day of ditching and day drinking. And I remember maybe two memories of that day of getting to the house and then waking up with pants undone, sitting on a kitchen counter. And I knew that I have a very, very like a distant memory of coming to like scene. And then he was on top of me. And the next thing I know, I'm in the kitchen and it's like all, it's just a blur, but you know, women know like something's not right. There's something that happened. And probably 6 months later.
Who was this person? That it was just like a friend?
Yeah. Well, he wasn't even a friend. It was just, we all went to school together. And it just happened like so quickly that it's like literally the whole day passed. But I only remember maybe a couple memories of that day. Like if it was all together, but it wasn't. It was very spread out. And I just remember walking home like, okay, this literally happened, but I couldn't say it out loud to anybody. Like I never told anybody at school or any of the friends I had. Like I was afraid that I'd be blamed because I went to with these people. I was drinking with them. I would be told, why were you there? Why did you drink? You know, it's like, does anybody ever expect that you're going to go with your friends that you've been with hundreds of times, places that somebody's at this one particular day, somebody's going to drug you and assault you and then, you know, act like it's not a big deal.
And you had such a history of people not believing you and not supporting you. And, you know, so to be assaulted, to be in this place again is why would you, in what world would you put yourself through that? And you have learned as a defense to just internalize, deal.
That it had it. Forget about it. And, you know, that's it. Like that was the message that was planted a long time ago, was that things happen and you don't talk about it and you move on and maybe it'll go away or maybe not. Like that part wasn't said. It was just, you just move on. 6 months later, I hung out with my aunt's daughter, who was my cousin. And I went to a gathering with her and her friends. And I thought, hey, you know, she's my older cousin. We lived together like sisters for a few years. And we went to a friend's house of hers, of her friends, and we were drinking. And the next thing I know, I'm outside with a male friend of hers and I'm being assaulted a second time. And she never asked, like, where'd you disappear to? Or like nothing. It was just as if, oh, we're here, we're drinking, it's not a big deal. I was able outside to like pull myself away and I walked in the house. But then the next thing I know, I don't know how much time passed, that the next memory I have is waking up on the couch again. And he is on me. He finishes, goes to the room. And I'm just like, okay, this really like occurred. I don't know where my cousin was. We wake up the next morning. She says, we're leaving. We drive home and never was asked any questions or like nothing. It was that easy to just be like, oh, I guess this is what you do. You go to parties and, you know, this happens. And I'm only at this time, I'm 16. And they're way older than me. Like they're in their, you know, 20s, mid 20s. What grown man decides to be with a 16-year-old girl? So that really was like those two incidents happening so close together. That was very hard for me. I spiraled after that. I self-medicated as much as possible. I drank just to sleep. I ditched school. I just thought, if I don't sleep, I won't have bad dreams or I won't be waking up startled. But then if I do sleep, I'm going to have dreams or wake up scared. And I went through that for so long that I didn't tell anybody because I was afraid that nobody would believe that this happened once, but twice. Like, no, I was afraid of that rejection or afraid that I just wouldn't be believed. And I think that happens to a lot of girls, that they don't say anything because who's going to believe, you know,
yeah,
a girl who willingly went to a party, who willingly went to drink with people. And it's, you know, it's awful that there's a lot of people who feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, to not be believed or to have the fear or to know or to see or witness, you know, regardless, if you experienced it firsthand a lot, and a lot of survivors experience it maybe through the media or maybe hearing a rumor about this girl who went to a party and now she regrets blah, 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 right? These are all versions of what we kind of describe as rape culture that keeps survivors silent because you're terrified that if you come forward and you say this happened to me and you're not believed, there's just, it's like losing all of the air inside of your body. It's just this ear, like you can't take that back. You can't take that moment back of someone hearing you describe what has become this huge moment that's leading to all of these things, not sleeping and self-medicating and just feeling all of this hurt and pain, and to have someone look at you and say, I don't believe you. I just think that this is all whatever, dramatic or, you know, insert reason. It's losing another part of yourself, and it's hard to put yourself out there to lose another part of yourself when something was taken in such a egregious way.
Right. Yeah. It was definitely all of that. It was, I didn't know who I was. I didn't feel ever safe. I was very self-conscious. I lived with a lot of guilt and shame and anger and sadness, and had to try to mask that and act normal. So one of the assaults that happened with somebody at school, his version was very different.
Mm-hmm.
He went to school and told people that we slept together. And so because that happened, his version was obviously believed, and I was bullied because of it through high school. Like, people at school were like, oh my gosh, she slept with this person. She doesn't even know him. And then it was like, I would walk by girls or guys and they would yell things out to me or call me names. And I was bullied because of a trauma that I was having, but I couldn't tell my version of it because who was going to believe me?
So they were kind of bullying you from the sense of, you know, you're the person that slept around card. Is that kind of what it was based on?
Oh, okay. Yes. And I didn't know how to deal with that. So I ditched school all the time to be away from that. And, you know, I had suicidal thoughts because I thought don't have anybody to turn to. I can't, this is so heavy to like deal with. I'm 16 and I have all my life dealt with up to this point, some form of trauma that I just wanted to go away. I didn't want to think about it. I didn't want to feel it. I just wanted to wake up one day and feel normal, of like to be able to breathe and to feel like I don't feel like dirty or shameful. And it was for so many years like that, to where I thought, I can block this out. It's going to go away. I'm going to forget about it one day and I'm going to be like, okay. But I never felt like normal or whatever normal is, but I didn't get to feel what I felt like a lot of teenagers got to feel, like just being able to hang out or feel comfortable in your own skin or get to know what the whole seed that was planted in me was men was going to use you. Cause my aunt loved to tell me that, you know, I wasn't good enough for somebody or men were just going to use me. And then having these episodes happen, it was like, oh, okay, well, this is kind of how it goes. So I felt like I didn't know what a real like normal sexual relationship was. Like, this is what I knew it as. So I didn't get to categorize, like, you fall in love with like your first boyfriend and you guys are, you know, you experience things together. It was like these things were taken from me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to feel like okay with these things.
Yeah, because you lost more than just your body. You lost typical, I mean, like you said, how we want to define it, but that stereotypical growing up, coming of age moments of playfulness, of innocence, of romance, of little dramas. You know, in high school, you're supposed to deal with, in middle school, you were dealing with really heavy, intense things. At six, you were dealing with it. You know, in those moments, you're supposed to get in a fight with your best friend because they have a same crush on a boy as you do, or, you know, a girl. That's the journey. That's supposed to be the road we walk down. And that was also taken from you inside of all of this.
Yeah. I didn't get to just experience what a normal childhood was, or, you know, adolescence or anything. So it's like I lived with these things of how I thought, well, this is just what's happened. So this is how it must be. You just be quiet with things. You let it go. you shove it deep down and you'll be okay. One day, you know, you'll be fine. So I got into a serious relationship when I was 16 with somebody who was 7 years older than me. And I thought, oh, this is okay. 'Cause he loves me and he's older and he's going to know and he's going to protect me. And that relationship turned to very, very verbally abusive, very quickly. He was controlling. And I thought, this is okay because he cares. And if anybody was really paying attention, somebody who's 16 dating somebody who's way older, that should have been like, okay, this isn't okay. But it took me years to realize, like, he was just another abuser that I had. Like, he took advantage of a kid.
Yeah. And I mean, you're not of age. You're not, technically.
I know nothing. I'm this naive young person who has trauma, and he played on that. Like, 100%. He played on that drama and on the trauma, and he just used that to his advantage. And I thought, well, this is what love is. They protect you. They tell you, no, don't wear this. Don't do that. I was isolated. And then I was pregnant at 17. I had my son at 18, and it was just, I felt very trapped until the end turned physically abusive. But at that time, I had no self-esteem at all. Like, I had no self-esteem from the trauma, but then dating him, I had really no self-esteem. I hated myself. I felt like, well, he knows best. I have to listen. I was controlled. I didn't see friends. I didn't see family. And then finally, when I was like, I can't like do this, I was strong enough somewhere for my son to leave that situation. But I realized that it took me years to be like, okay, he was an abuser of mine. Like, this is not okay. This was not a relationship. This was not normal. And so, you know, I had years and years of what I went through being younger, and then his own trauma that he gave me. It took years to like feel like, okay, that wasn't my fault. Like, he was the adult.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about a lot of things in there. You were underage, you become pregnant, you have a little one. And then also you mentioned something, and October is actually Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Yeah. And so you kind of said about like cycles, right? And you're broken down and he would bring you back. You know, it's these sorts of things. I think a lot of people struggle with understanding how domestic violence or an abusive relationship is not always bad, that there are these good moments that we hold on to, or protective moments, right? If there was moments where you felt scared and he protected you, you didn't have that for so much of your life. How nice to have this person that sees you and guides you in this way. Do you mind just like talking a little bit about this, that cycle piece? I think people struggle with really understanding that.
Oh yeah. So I thought in the beginning, like, everybody's nice, right? Every man, you meet a man or a woman and they're so nice when you start dating, because why? I mean, everyone's nice. You don't see their true self until, you know, weeks, months later. And I thought, this is okay. This is safe. I'm good. Until the first argument happened. And then it was like, well, why are you acting like this? You must like what happened to you when you were younger, or else you wouldn't act like this. So he used my trauma against me. And then I was like, wow, like how do you say that to somebody that you supposedly love? One, it's because I love you, so that you don't make me look a certain way or yourself. And then you start believing these things because why? You're young. You want them to love you. You don't want to be rejected. You want to feel like somebody's on your side. You know, and then we'd have good days where I'm like, oh, yesterday was just a bad day, you know, but that doesn't mean every day is going to be a bad day, or he's sorry, until, you know, sorries don't mean anything. Mm-hmm. And you are afraid to say anything because you don't want to make him mad, and you're tiptoeing, and your life is now just walking on eggshells. And, you know, I had no idea that I was in an abusive relationship until it was too late to know, like, oh my gosh, like, I've been living this for 3 years. And 3 years when you're in an abusive relationship seems like 30. Like, it, I felt like we've only been together 3 years, but in 3 years, I dealt with
the worst names being called. It got to a point when I was pregnant with my son that he controlled everything, that we would be driving on the freeway to go to a doctor's appointment. And I would have to have my seat all the way completely back so that I couldn't see out the window and nobody could see me, because I was told, you just want to see people for attention. You want people to see you. Nobody cares about you. Who's going to want you? I'm the only one who's going to, you know, put up with you or be with you. And I believed it because I just did.
Yeah. And
I thought, okay, really? I'm really in a car all the way so nobody can see me. And I felt like a prisoner. I mean, I couldn't watch TV. I couldn't talk to anybody that he said. I couldn't go anywhere. And I'm only 18. I mean, right. 18 years old. And I'm thinking, okay, like, I just felt like 20 years were on me. And I knew the moment I left that I would never be able to go back. But I felt like he still had a hold on me because of all the months and months and months of abuse. You know, you just feel like, well, maybe he'll be different. Maybe we just need a break. Or, you know, it was always something. But it did take me years to know, like, that was not a healthy relationship. That was very toxic. But usually people don't know that until late. And, you know, it's late. Or people would tell me, like, you know, he's abusive, or how do you let him treat you like that? But I couldn't see it at the time. I always made excuses. I always thought, no, it's just, you don't know him. When we're alone, you know, things are different. But who wants to make it seem like your relationship is like that? So I got very good at, even when I lived with my aunt, making people think that life was good at home. Mm. And I did that for him. And I got really good at doing that. And then one day I was like, wow, I really protected my abusers by making everybody think that things are great, everything's fine. And I wondered why I did that. But a lot of it was fear. It's like, you don't want people to know that you're bullied and abused at home. You don't want somebody to think that you're abused in your relationship, because what are they going to think of you? Or you're going to be talked about, and who wants that? Right. So
it sounds like maybe shame played a little bit of a role. Oh, and
tons of,
yeah. Like just around all of it, just like, I mean, it was put on you, you know, obviously people by design made you feel ashamed of things. That was, I think shame is a very powerful tool in keeping us silent or complacent. It just sounds like there was just so much shame to the point where it immobilized you in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it definitely did. And it, you know, years of obviously therapy and just really thinking back, getting older and like thinking back of being really young, I was like, I was really dating like a sociopath. Like he was a master manipulator. Like he knew what to say. It's like he found somebody who was young and naive who would listen. Mm-hmm. But he played on the trauma and the abuse that I had, that, you know, he knew what to say, he knew what to do. And so, you know, now that, you know, my son is 20, he doesn't really understand the reason why I can't have a co-parenting relationship with his dad, or why I choose not to talk. He doesn't know the full extent of it. Because I mean, it would be hard to hear a kid talk about another parent of, this is what I went through, and these, you know, but he's just, I've never been able to have that conversation with him of my son's dad to say, this is what you did to me, like mm-hmm. this. But I'm hoping during my healing process, I'm still like healing from everything that I feel like one thing that's really going to help me have that healing with that part is like facing my abuser to say, this is what you did. You don't get to win anymore. I took my power back by standing up to say, you are an abuser. Like I was a kid, I was 16 years old.
Right.
So just kind of like, I decided one day that I needed to write my story. Like that was my way of finally putting my foot down to say, okay, yes, for a long time, I was scared, I was ashamed, I was sad. But you know what? One day that baggage gets really heavy to carry.
It's too heavy.
Here I am like 20 something years later. And, you know, I finally got to a place where I was able to like trust somebody and get married. And how do you tell your soon to be husband, like, this is my past? And all that stuff was not in the way when we met, but as we got into our relationship, I had triggers, things were coming up, and I'm like, okay, why now? Why are these popping up? And then I had to explain, like, this is my past, this is my trauma. I can't help that some days I'm perfectly fine, and then some days something pops up and I feel a certain way, or I can't watch certain shows or movies because this is in it. And then I kind of go back to the day of my having trauma. But it's, I mean, it was a lot. So I decided therapy is a good thing to keep in my routine. So writing my story out, part one of my story, really helped me to feel like empowered, like, no, this was not okay. Something was wrong with each of these people. It wasn't me. I was not to blame. My past doesn't define who I am. So that really, really helped me to, my way of kind of speaking out was writing about it. It might not be, but I did get backlash for sharing my story publicly and saying, you know, this is what this person did to me. And I knew I would receive backlash, but it's nothing compared to what I lived with for all these years. So I was like, you can say what you want. You can word it however you want, but this is my story to tell. Yeah. You know, it's not anybody else's. And if anybody has an issue, then don't read it or don't, you know, just, I mean, don't, it's not, you know, right. Everybody has a way of kind of dealing with it, but I chose to do it this way because it's like, I was silenced for so many years. It's like, now I don't have to be silenced. Like,
absolutely. I can
speak freely and have a voice for others who aren't able to speak. And, you know, my whole point of doing that was, even if I reached one person who read my story to say, you know what, it is okay to speak up and it is okay to say, then it was all worth it. Or even if nobody ever read my story, but for me, that was my way of healing, was to say, I need to get this out of me because I can't live with this deep down inside anymore.
Absolutely. And I mean, even talking with you and sitting here with you, it's inspiring, and your story is inspiring, and you are helping me. And I talk to a lot of people that do and go through these things, but the way that you're able to think about and talk about your story is very honest and real and has this kind of sense of hope to it that I think you need to hear, especially if you're in the middle of it, or maybe you're 12 years old or whatever you might be experiencing, to hear your voice, your strength, your heartache. I mean, it's all of it, right? It's not just, healing is not easy, and it's not rainbows and butterflies, and it is messy and it is hard. And it does have this light to it. It's hard to put into words, but it's there, and you present it just so beautifully. Yeah. And where can people read your story and learn more about what you've gone through?
Part one of my story is on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's called Learning to Cope. I am currently in the process of completing book two. I'm hoping to have this out by Christmas. That's my hope. But between working and life and kids and, you know, it's like, it takes a bit, but I'm hoping to have, my whole goal for this is, part one was kind of like the foundation of starting how my trauma started. And then book two is the middle of becoming a teen mom and dealing with those traumas in high school, assaults and whatnot. And then part three is more of like, I'm an adult and kind of like seeing that light at the end of the tunnel. You know, this is me sharing my story and how far I've come from where I started. So that was kind of my building that story up instead of just kind of having it like, boom, here it is. It was just, I feel like that's how I kind of got through it with life, was like, my first book was stuff that I couldn't, things I couldn't control in life.
Yeah.
Second is, things were still happening that I couldn't control, but a lot of it was things that I used, that I did to cope because I didn't know what else to do. Choices that I felt like I couldn't make besides doing the choices that I made. I wasn't given the life tools like everybody else was given or taught. I just winged it and I went, just figured it out. And, you know, it wasn't always the best, but, you know, I feel like healing doesn't have it. There's no time frame. Like, there's not to say, okay, in, you know, 10 years and 6 months, you're going to get to a place where you're okay. Like healing, there's no time frame, and there's always new chapters written. There's always just, you're going to have good days, bad days, sad days. But I feel like as long as you can know, like, you know what, today's a sad day. I'm going to stay in bed. I'm going to cry. Tomorrow I'm going to recharge. Like that was my, I had to be okay with those things to say, I'm going to be mad one day. I'm going to be sad, but you know what? Tomorrow I'm going to wake up. I'm going to be stronger. I got that out of me. And you have to be able to give yourself time to grieve of, I grieved for so many years of a little girl that I lost that, mm-hmm. you know, and then it's like, okay, I'm here and I have kids and I want to be able to show my kids that I will always believe you when you come to me. Never be afraid to tell me something. I will be your biggest cheerleader, your biggest supporter. And I want them to have what I didn't have growing up.
Yeah. I mean, you know? That's amazing. I think a lot of, to take your story and to feel that way, not everyone feels like they deserve that. Yeah. I think healing has a certain element of, you deserve to heal. You deserve to be believed. You deserve to have your story out there and you, you know, feeling that and owning it, to have sad days. You know, I say all the time, being a survivor means you went through hell and hell's really exhausting. So oh, you yeah. need... You need days of rest. You need days of anger. You need days of fuck it, right? Like there yeah. it's, you went through so much, your body, your mind, your heart went through so much. It's okay to have those days. It's hard to give yourself grace for sure. Those are not easy things. But you know, I think sometimes putting it in the way of when you've survived something, you battled, and after battling, you need rest. So
oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely able to breathe now and kind of, like, know that, yes, I took me years to know, like, yes, I do deserve a good life. And my past is just that. It's my past. And, you know, I want to be happy and I want to be able to, you know, share these memories with my children and smile and, you know, think like, yes, I did have a hard upbringing, but I'm here to tell my story. Yeah. And, you know, even if it takes somebody weeks, years, months, whatever it is, if you're able to share your story, you never know who's listening that needed to hear that, like at that time.
Absolutely.
They did it. Like I can easily do that. And there's this whole community of survivors out there that are ready to stand behind, you know, all these survivors to say, yes, we are a community. We understand each other because our stories and our traumas are similar. And I think that's what a lot of people, you know, need to know is that there are so many people out there. And I never felt like I was like anybody else. I never felt like everybody else. But when I started meeting survivors from different states and different platforms, I was like, okay, this is my, these are my people. Like I yeah. belong, and we are all in this thing together. And I feel like the more people that share their story and have a voice, we're going to break that cycle, hopefully.
Absolutely. Ben, you know, I personally am very honored to have you be a part of this little Breaking Silence community and sharing just as part of your story. You know, I feel like we could talk for hours on all the different ways that you've journeyed through this life, but I will make sure to put a link to your book, Learning to Cope, and please let us know when you, and if you publish the next one. I know it's a very long journey. I'm sure you will, but yeah, just thank you for sharing your voice. It means so, so much to me and to the listeners. And I just really appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem. I'm happy to advocate, and hopefully, you know, I'm able to help somebody else who needs to hear that. So.
Absolutely. You are, I guarantee it. And yeah, we just really appreciate you being on the podcast, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Bye, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Safety, it's all right here. We are back in the sun.